we get everyone to sign this book. So if you are willing to do so, this book will be passed around, and if you will, if you are not already in touch with Koinonia, please put your information on there, and or actually everybody put their information on there and say you're already a friend of Koinonia, because our fellow community members, you know, we're trying to build trust, and they'll ask us, well, who did you talk to? So you can show them. Koinonia, many of you raised your hand, but often the mother is less famous than the children. So the quickest way sometime to reveal a little bit about Koinonia is we gave birth to Habitat for Humanity. We began our journey in 1942 in rural South Georgia, and we started with the land, bought a rundown piece of land in that part of the world, and began to nurture it back to health. We introduced farming practices in the 40s and early 50s, new farming practices that revolutionized that part of the South and the way it farmed, and got into trouble because we had this notion that Jesus told us to love everyone, no matter who they were or the color of their skin. So in the 50s, we became under physical attack. Our trees, pine trees cut down, fences cut, letting our animals out onto Highway 49. And ultimately what brought Koinonia to its knees was an economic boycott, where no one would sell anything to us or purchase anything from us. So our egg business and our of all the businesses that we had going suffered greatly. But we started a bakery. We started, if you know Koinonia, you know our advertising slogan that Clarence Jordan coined back then. We had all these pecans. We wanted to survive, so he coined the advertising phrase, "Help us ship the nuts out of Georgia." And we've been doing that ever since. So our business, what we call our products business, it's a bakery business. We've brought catalogs to give to everyone. And the back has a longer history of Koinonia than I can give you now. It meant survival to the community. And that is still our basic in terms of income to the farm. It comes through this catalog business. All of the community survives, receives sustenance from this bakery business. But how are we structured that's different? Koinonia had a common purse for more than 50 years. In the 90s, Koinonia kind of went away from its original vision, but now has come back to it. In 2005, we returned to the original vision. Amanda and I receive an allowance from the community. We have not gone back to the common purse yet, though I hope that maybe someday we will. I wish I could be hearing that other workshop that is about that right now. But our allowance is based on a percentage of the income that comes in through the product sales. Everyone, whether you are an exploring member, a provisional member, or a member who has entered a covenant, a life commitment to being a part of this community, we all receive the same allowance. Community members keep the business going. we all have different jobs that feed into that business. It is also a way that we help nurture our friendship with our neighbors, in that during harvest season, during our busiest season of the year, which is in the fall, we are able to hire employees seasonally. The rest of the year, we have no employees. We can't afford to have employees. But we are able during that period of time to enter into another kind of relationship with our neighbors, in that they come and work at Koinonia. Koinonia is built on three, we have three things that we focus on: education, hospitality, and sustainability. When we return to the communal living, we began to look for a way to return to the land. No farming was done at Koinonia from 56 to 1970, and then from 70 to 90 or so, some really good farming happened. And then in the 90s, we went the way of so many farms and chemicals and all sorts of things. So we have returned to looking at how we can be a demonstration for how to sustain the earth. Our products business, we use it as a primary educational tool. It's a way to make friends. It's a way to stay in touch with our friends. It's a way to talk about fair trade. We sell fair trade coffee, so we can talk about that. When you look at our products, you'll see all the antioxidant information we have about pecans. So we can talk about that. But you will see that not all of the products are what we want them to be ultimately. We are moving towards all organic products. But we also have other forms of education in there. We sell books written by Clarence Jordan and other members of the community. We were fortunate to have a lot of Clarence Jordan's talks that we've now transferred to CDs. So we are continuing on with that. We think a great service to the world. Not heard Clarence Jordan speak or read any of his books. It is a different way of looking at the kingdom than I know that I was that I experienced before I discovered Koinonia. So that is just a broad smattering here from Koinonia. Amanda, you can add all the things that I left out.
I think you pretty much covered everything.
Did I stay within the time frame?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I think moving from farming with a community that lives kind of together to the world of computers and software development feels a little bit like moving from the sublime to the ridiculous. But the business that Dayspring Inn is in, I think just very briefly, because I think people always want to know, well, what is it actually that you do? You know, I think pecans are and bakery goods, it's pretty easy to explain. We basically build websites and build web applications for folks. So an example is we built an application for the Golden State Warriors, the basketball team of ill repute from our area, to analyze analyze play calls when certain players are on the floor. What's the conversion? What's the average kind of points per play that you can get when somebody's when certain player combinations are on the floor? Another example of things that we've done: doing website for University of California, San Francisco Department of Pathology, basically putting all that content, doing both the visuals as well as as well as the programming work for that. So it's kind of a range of things in the web development computer area. And obviously, the folks that are with me today from, or you know, in some way connected with Dayspring, my pastor, Danny Fong, who is actually the lead founder of Dayspring and was president up until 2002 when he was called to become our pastor. Bruce is a coworker of mine, who's actually employee number one at the company. And then Craig Wong has been a long time, was on the committee of our Congregation Grace Fellowship that initially reviewed the business plan for the company. And I think speaks to just the way that we've tried to approach the business as submitted to the local congregation. And Craig and Danny currently sit on the board of Dayspring. So I'm going to ask Danny to give some of the early history and the vision of Dayspring, and then Craig will talk a little bit about Dayspring's relationship with Grace Urban Ministries and with the local church.
I think one of the ways to just give a general sense for the early history is that we didn't know what we were doing. And I think in a good way, we were naive and just, we had some basic understandings. And I'm not going to try to give a theological grounding for what we did. I think most of it was just that we had some basic understandings that we wanted to work with. And I know even from the session this morning, I have many more thoughts. And I think what I realized was that now I might try to analyze a lot longer and try to be much more strategic. But back then, we just did what we knew to do, and we tried to do something that we'd never done. So Qiming and I had some background, not a lot, a few years of consulting and software development experience, and we had this idea that we were called to use the skills, gifts that God had given us, and then try to use them for some way of serving a wider group of people. And so at that time, I was serving in the youth ministry at Grace Fellowship. Grace Fellowship had just started. It's a church in San Francisco that just started Grace Urban Ministries, a nonprofit. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be great to have also some kind of a for-profit arm? And we were all serving the same community. And it would be great if the kids that came to tutoring or came to some other thing and came to church would also be able to be a place where they could learn some job skills or what have you. And so we had this vision that we'd take the skills that we knew, and we were working at that time with a lot of at-risk youth, and we thought, well, let's help them see a work environment. So we specifically chose to be downtown so that we were out of either, you know, one gang's territory or another gang's territory. We'll go downtown. They'll come down and they'll see the place and they'll feel like they're going to a real work a workplace. We had this idea that we could train them up from, you know, for some kids struggling in high school to become a software programmer. That's pretty grandiose. And so we put all that out, and Craig was one of the people that reviewed the business plan. And I know that more than one person basically asked, how are you going to get kids from here to here? You know, that just didn't seem like it would work. And I think we considered that, and there's part of the being hopefully in a good way naive. We really didn't have an answer. We just knew that we couldn't do any other kind of business. I mean, we might consider trying to start a restaurant, but I grew up in a restaurant, and there was no way we were going to try to do a restaurant because that's just way too much work. And I mean, we had some things that we could offer, and so we'll just do that. And we had a very basic business plan because we didn't have degrees in business either, and it was this, that if we, if all the employees took lower pay and all the profits of the company went back into the company, we ought to have leftover or abundance to put into whatever ministry that God would give to us. And to a certain extent, that's still our philosophy, that ought to work. Well, after you've done that, then you realize you actually have to run a successful business. But because you don't, your employees get low pay just because you can't generate business and you don't have any profit. But if, you know, under the ideal that actually, you know, you could actually run a successful business, then you can turn all that back, you know, back into it. So it was a very basic thing, and that got us started. And I don't know at what point, it was actually fairly recent, when we came to the realization that we had done what we could with that particular specific ministry, and Qiming will talk more about other things that we do now, and the, all the things that we discovered along the way that we never even intended to do. But we realized after about 7 or 8 years that this vision of taking a young person and bringing them all the way, that it's very narrow. Not every person should be a computer programmer or a web designer or any kind of thing, but we're really glad for all the folks who have come through and have had the kind of experience that they've had. But one of the other dimensions that I might just want to add, because I don't think I'm doing more than my 5 minutes now, is that we really wanted this to be submitted to the church that we are part of. We presented the plan to the session at that time, and not many of those guys were also not business type people. And for the most part, they said, yeah, it's not just, you know, go for it, but we don't want to have an official tie between the church and this business. And so it's church-based, but we don't have any formal ties. And I remember we went to extremes of like, okay, then we're going to do the kind of information meeting off-site. We told we didn't want to do it at church, but we'll make it look like it was kind of this official thing. But the reality was that we raised all the startup capital from within the congregation. That I don't remember the exact number, but it was 80,000. So, and at that time, again, part of this kind of this naivete was just, we got together and I said, you know, we've never done this before. We've never done a business. We don't know if it's going to work, but this is what we'd like to do. If you want to be a part of it, come and you know, $50, you know, $10,000, you know, whatever. And there was a sense, and Qiming remembers this, one of the elders and investors said, if things go well, we'll rejoice together. If not, and we lose all our money, we'll learn how to be the church. And so that was the spirit with which we did it. And I felt like that was one experience of, I think, hearing what Kavanaugh said today, that this kind of more local trusting of one another. And I know that we were committed to paying that interest, and we wanted to pay it all off, and we were able to do that. But I remember whenever we paid the interest, which was at the end of the year, we'd write our letter, we'd send a check in, and then people would be surprised. They had forgotten that they were, you know, other people said, don't give us any money back, we've just given it to you, which we were structured as a for-profit, and so, you know, what do you do with that? I wasn't sure how they did that in the book, so people would give money to a for-profit. So I think we still have some numbers like that in our books. We just kind of have a number for it, and we just leave it there. I've ever stopped, like, Craig, go.
So in addition to being a member of Grace Fellowship Community Church, I am the executive director of Grace Woodman Ministries, which Danny mentioned was formed just about 1 or 2 years before Dayspring was. I want to first just say that when it comes to technology, Grace Urban Ministries would be doo-doo without Dayspring. I mean, they have done all of our website work and email and networking and tools for things like our community health fair and just all kinds of wonderful gifts they have given to help us do our ministry. So I want to just begin by saying that, to thank them for that publicly. we were very much a part of that vision for working with youth in our community, we're not doing that anymore. But one way that this worked, which just maybe illustrates sort of how this partnership has worked, and we want to continue to explore this partnership, is that. The young folks that did end up working at Dayspring and got trained at Dayspring were because of Grace Fellowship's relationship to the local high school there in the Latino Mission District of San Francisco. And so through a program that we called Preparing Youth to Serve in the Marketplace, which is called PRISM, it was our relationship with some of our teachers that worked in the school. Kids from that school became a part of our job training program. And so it was the congregation that provided, we provided a training curriculum for the youth, a mentoring program. And so we had various congregational adults hooking up with these youth and becoming their mentor, in some ways surrogate parent. You know, get out of bed, get dressed. This is how you present yourself at work, and so on and so forth. And so the church provided that relational base for the youth that eventually were to go to Dayspring and get trained and do the work that they did. And so that was a very tangible way that we worked together. There's a way in which we can talk about church and for-profit and non-profit working together in partnership, that sounds very, you know, sexy to funders and all that, you know. But really more important than that we can sort of work on for-profit, non-profit, and church partnership is that the thing that we share in common together is that we understand that the church sits at the center of God's strategy for reaching his world. And so we spend a lot of time working on that question together. How does our work in terms of our impact in the community, or our service in the community, how are we working with the local congregations? How is it submitted to their leadership? How is the congregations being built and nourished and discipled in all of that? And so we really work hard at making sure that the work that we do is really in service of the church's mission, and in service of the local congregation's particular vision and ministry. So we work on those questions a lot together, and I think that it's just been a huge gift to be able to have that kind of partnership.
That's great. Yeah. So for the next little bit, I think the plenaries have one way of helping us to frame how to think about things. I think for us, we see the workshops as what are some ways we can actually put that into practice. And so we'll probably be pretty concrete in some of the things that we talk about. And for sure, from our perspective, you know, we feel like it's not a definitive word by any means. It's more a matter of sharing how we've approached it in our history and as ways, you know, examples of things that we've tried as ways to stimulate conversation, help us imagine together what gospel economics in the marketplace might look like. So you want to go ahead and talk about concrete practices?
Yeah, I thought we would illustrate something very concrete. Koinonia needs desperately for its website to be updated. Day spring. We have chocolate and pecans.
Yeah, that's actually very.
And a couple goats, if you'd like.
The goats, I don't know
our practices.
The goats, I don't know if
we have space.
If we have place for them in San Francisco, but actually, I can talk a little bit about. This is interesting. One of the reasons why we wanted to do this workshop was actually because we wanted to spend time with folks like Koinonia and learn from their, you know, they've got 50-some years of history. We have 10 or 12 years of history. We are in need of looking for folks to do our annual Christmas gifts to our clients. So, I mean, I think there is a way in which a barter economy...
There you go.
It's done.
Was that planned, or was that...
No, that was totally not planned.
No, she's putting us on the spot.
She's saying in the afternoon.
Right, in the afternoon session, we'll have Brent ask that question again. I could take that opportunity to talk a little bit about how we think... at Dayspring, we've tried to come into thinking about our practices in three arenas. So workplace, marketplace, and community. So we kind of think somewhat in concentric circles in some ways, that there's certain relationships that we have within our workplace that we feel like the gospel definitely has something to speak to. There's 14 of us that are part of either Grace Fellowship or Redeemer that work at this business. And so there's, you know, workplace practices, there's marketplace practices, or how we come at engaging the broader group of clients, you know, customers, vendors, people that serve us, and then finally the area of community. And one of the things that that we do is that we do have a practice of our practices, I think, are different from Koinonia, because in some ways we are coming more from the model of we are a business. We purposely decided to structure as a for-profit business because we want to explore it from that direction. And so in some ways we take some of the structures of for-profit business and then try to explore well, what does that actually look like to take small steps in the direction of bearing witness to something alternative? So we have a practice of tithing from our profits, and over the course of our 11, you know, over the last 11 years, we basically tithe approximately $120,000, or about 20% of our net income, and that goes to support various ministries, whether locally, Grace River Ministries, there's some ministries overseas, different places that supports. I think we have a particular interest in supporting folks that are trying to do business informed by the gospel. And so there is an organization in Cambodia that is basically trying to run a sewing business called Hands of Hope. And they're employing former girls that are being rescued out of the commercial sex trade and to teach them skills to sew and then to sell Cambodian handicrafts. So we've done their website for them and supported them. One of the interesting things about I feel like it's kind of a glamorous thing for for-profit companies these days to have some kind of social responsibility. And so you have Google that's committing 1% equity and 1% profit. Salesforce.com, which is probably less well known out here than it is in San Francisco, it's kind of a .com company. They have what they call their 1-1-1 thing, 1% equity, 1% profit, and 1% employee time. I'm Chinese, so this is actually quite uncomfortable to be talking about ourselves as much as we are today. But in the interest of giving you something concrete to work with and to imagine, I think the model that we follow is 100% equity, 10% profit, and 5% time. So the 100% equity is the sense that we consider ourselves as stewards. So Psalm 24 that Roy Terry read from or preached from yesterday says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. So the starting place that we start with is God owns everything. We are managers, we're stewards. And so the ownership belongs to the Lord. And so that equity, and we're actually in the process of working out how that would be structured. We're actually thinking about setting up or planning on setting up a nonprofit to actually own 100% of this for profit, so that we structure in the idea that the profits of the company belong to the Lord. The 10% profit, like I talked about, tithing out of our profit, and in reality, it's been more than just a strict 10%. And then the 5% time, which gets to kind of the concrete practice here, is that we've set up for ourselves that we're a services model business, which means that we basically bill our time, we bill our hours. And so we've set kind of a benchmark of 5% of our hours we'd like to also be directing towards ministry, towards things like potentially working with CoinGam.
Good. At Koinonia, we have we talk about five pillars: prayer, work, study, service, and fellowship. And we are striving to balance those things. It's extremely difficult. We find that being all of us there now have been brought up in the American culture, and work and the unhealthy side of work seems to trump the other four pillars, but that's our focus is to balance things. Our work, David Castle, who was a community member for 10 years, who died last August, he said, our work is an excuse to be together. So we try to structure all the work at Koinonia. We try to do it in teams. We try to build in opportunities for doing it in fun ways, sometimes pretty creative ways. We pray throughout the day at Koinonia. We start off with prayer in the morning. We have a bell at 10:30, 3:30, and 8:30 that call us to pray. We pray at the end of the day. So our workplace we are constantly reminding each other in the environment that we have built that we're working for something greater than ourselves, that we have a senior partner. And one thing that we've struggled with at Koinonia is we feel like we have to do it all. We get into this mindset, we have to do it all ourselves. And this is a huge farm with very few resources. At the turn of the century, Koinonia discovered, because it went off on another track and things got out of hand, we went for more of the conventional work structure. We found ourselves $1 million in debt. And we've managed to climb out of that, but we have a long, we have a lot to do on limited resources. And is there anything that you would like to say on that list there?
One thing that's very important for us to remember, and Brenna already said it, but we are a community that runs a business. We're not a community that has a business. We're not a business that has a community. And we have to keep reminding ourselves, our business is not our purpose. It sustains us, just as our farming sustains us, but it's not our purpose and it's not our identity. Our identity is to live as a demonstration plot for God's kingdom. And so that informs every single little detail of our life pretty much. And it can get a little hectic, you know, trying to work out the very minutiae of what it means to live and work and do advertising and marketing and all this kind of stuff, but that really is what informs everything that we do at the farm.
Our work too provides us a means to serve others. So we see we have two sources of income. We have contributed income. Koinonia was purchased with a donation, and so donations have been a part of our life ever since. And we really try to structure everything so that donations go to serve people other than those of us who have been called to live this way of life there on that farm. But we use a percentage of what comes in from our products business to sustain us, and we want to use the money to put back into the mostly the local community, the larger community around us, and we do that in many different ways. Just about everyone at Koinonia spends some time away from the farm. Maybe the community member is no longer there, but she taught English as a second language at the local Catholic church. We have a group of us go into the local food pantry to distribute food. We have some of us tutor kids in the local public schools. So the business is seen as a way for us to be physically involved with sustaining ourselves, and yet we don't. Our business. I don't believe has become our idol. I don't believe it consumes us, but rather is seen as a way is really seen as a partner, so we are able to serve or have more freedom with which to serve others.
We've come at in similar ways. I think, you know, we also at Dayspring also think of kind of the business as a place to be able to work together. So I wanted to talk about for us some concrete practices that we have in our workplace. I think there's some basic things that you have to have in a business, like salaries. You have to have a way of thinking about benefits, potentially. You have to have a way of thinking about who gets to be an employee in the business. And so I think I wanted to kind of lay out some assumptions that I see capitalism making, and then some of the approaches that we've tried to kind of take in looking at that. So for salaries, I think, you know, the basic assumption is basically that the market sets the pay. The market decides what folks are paid, and therefore, you know, you can justify astronomical CEO pay on justification, basically, well, that's what the market says the CEO should be paid, versus a, you know, unlivable worker wages. So kind of coming from the traditional structure of business, how we've tried to approach that is basically put some caps on the ratio of the top paid folks within our business and the folks that are the lowest paid. And, our ratio currently is a 2x ratio. So, you know, somebody who's coming in straight out of college and becoming a part of the business versus folks that have been there, you know, for a decade or more. That's administrative staff versus folks that are senior consultants. That's kind of the ratio that we've been working with. I think one of the things that we've had to work with is, well, you know, there are actually differences in folks' level of responsibilities, even kind of their availability to work or their desire to work a certain amount. And so I think that's one of those things where it's an opportunity for us to work together, and we see that as a place to work out, well, what does the gospel look like in actual relationships, in the matrix of actually trying to work some of these things out together. And I think it's one of the things where we see our submission to the local church and our dependence on the local church is that the local church is what is actually forming disciples to be able to have those kinds of conversations and to be able to talk about those things in ways that are, you know, helpful rather than divisive. One of the ways that we've thought about benefits for capitalism, my benefits are a part of my pay package that belongs to me. You negotiate a set of benefits that go with your salary, your health insurance, your vacation. You might, you know, negotiate benefits. And I think the way that we've really tried to think of it is that this business is a place for practical sharing, and that God provides for us. When we pray the Lord's Prayer together, and we use the debt and debtors version because, you know, that helps us remind the context that we're in. And when we pray, you know, give us our daily bread. Essentially, we recognize that that's us. That when I'm out here with you all, there are folks back in the office, you know, that I just sent an email to saying, yeah, I'm really grateful for you because you're there so that I can be here. That's the way we think of caring for folks when they're sick. That we're here in the office so that you can, you know, be at home and recovering, or if you have sick children. The last thing that I want to talk about was, I think the capitalism makes in the area of workplace is that capitalism has this assumption that everybody operates out of self-interest, and there's a quote-unquote invisible hand that then allocates good, you know, maximizes the good for everybody. So if everybody just pursues their unrestrained self-interest to the maximum extent possible, then capitalism will somehow, you know, the invisible hand will somehow manage to produce good out of that. And I think, you know, our praying the Lord's Prayer together challenges us to think of that we actually belong to one another, and we don't have to operate in unrestrained self-interest. And one example of that recently is, you know, we've got the economic climate for that everybody's aware of, and that Bill so skillfully dissected this morning. And that obviously affects businesses of all kinds, ours included. And so earlier this year, we actually got to the place where we needed to make a call about what we could pay folks. And what we decided to do after quite a bit of conversation was to cut folks' salary by 20% still asking them to work, you know, 90% of their hours. And I think the process was really instructive to me. I had folks on my leadership team that were basically, you know, volunteering, you know, we're doing fine, we could go without salary, or, you know, we could go, we could cut, you know, 50% or something like that. I felt like the response that was coming from all these folks, which is evidence of the Christian formation that they've had in our congregations, was one of generosity and not one of fear. When we had a staff meeting to talk about this with the rest of the staff, what we were doing, there were folks that came up afterwards and said, well, during the staff meeting, people said, you know, we're just really grateful for how you guys have thought about this and your leadership, and, which I don't think that's a normal response to that kind of news. We had folks that were talking about, well, maybe this will help us to learn to live more simply. We had folks that were basically talking about how perhaps this will put us in touch with folks in our congregation that are actually at a much different place, where, you know, their work is, they're undocumented, their work is taking care of children. When somebody gets cut salary, you know, theirs gets cut, you know, 75% because they no longer have the child care, no longer have the house cleaning work. So I feel like the evidence of the formation of disciples that's happening in the congregations was borne out in how folks respond to news that, you know, it's nobody would talk, think about it as great news, but it's a chance for us to actually practice what it means.
In terms of benefits at Koinonia, I'll just use the illustration of one. We don't talk about vacation. We don't have health care. We have a medical allowance, but we don't have health care. But we have something we call time away. And when we were returning to community, we very much were into, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending on how long you've been here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So finally, we just swept all of that away, and now we have a time away guideline: take what you need. Now that really terrified a whole lot of people, because the assumption was, well, you know what the assumption was. And we have a time away board, and we do time away. So, you know, a community member keeps record of all of that, the number of days that you've been away or up there on the board. And
it's public.
It's
That's important.
It's public. Well, anybody not being at the farm, it's pretty public. Yeah, it's tough to get everything done. And no one has, well, there was one, but she's no longer there. You know, I find when you live and you're trying to live out of the gospel, that things that have had to be put into place through the capitalistic system, some of that's good. I mean, you do need some of the order. I mean, there are good business practices that we definitely have as part of our life at Koinonia. But you know, time away has taken care of itself. No one is abusing that practice. I said earlier, we all receive a base allowance, but you can choose to receive no allowance or partial allowance, and people do that. I mean, we do have talk a lot about take what you need, and it's only been 4 years since we have returned to community, but it seems to be working. Would you agree with me on that?
I wanted to make make sure that we save time for questions, but if Danny or Bruce or Craig, if you guys want to fill in anything for, by way of company practices.
You have more, right?
I do have more, but I'm aware of kind of, I could share probably one more thing. I asked staff for, before I came here, for their reflections also, so that I can bring it in. And so I'll share just one in terms of kind of how we relate to the marketplace. I think in capitalism, I think it's clear that you engage in a relationship, kind of bare naked capitalism. You engage in relationships to the extent that they further the profit motive. Mm-hmm. So whether that's short term or long term, that is the rationale for engaging in relationships. And for us, one specific example that folks cited was we have one person that takes sales calls. So there's all kinds of, you know, everybody wants a website. Yeah, so they'll call him up. His name's John. I think he has basically felt a lot of freedom, and I think freedom that we've given him to spend a decent amount of time on the phone with folks that can't afford our services. So there's a certain set of things that we are able to do as a company, a certain kind of service that we're able to do, and there's other things that generally, you know, that we can't do because we can't sustain the business off of doing those things. He feels very free to spend half an hour and a half, you know, with folks talking about, well, you know, you might look into this, or you know, have you thought about this? What are you trying to do? Educating people essentially with, you know, basically, you know, he knows within the first 5 minutes, you know, if somebody is a good fit for us. The ability to live out of that kind of freedom is really a practice of confidence in God's abundance and God's ability to give us what we need. There are a lot of analogies to farming. We talk about it as, you know, sometimes there's harvest time and sometimes, you know, it's really dry or it's planting time. And you know, when it's harvest time, work and work is there, you got to do it. But we're aware that God's abundant, and so you know, John can spend that time. And there's actually one time where he actually got a card in the mail, a written card, and a woman wrote him a card basically thanking him for taking, you know, as much time on the phone with her as he did, and saying that, you know, I know you know that that we weren't going to be able to, you know, work with you, but I just appreciate you taking that time. We see that as just very small ways in which we're trying to recover relationships within the marketplace that are not simply transactional, that are not simply driven by profit motive, but have a human aspect to it that recovers what it means for us to be human, human beings.
Just one more thing real quickly that comes to mind because of John. The Quintanilla's business has always been a way for us to stay in touch. There was a time in our history where many, many different congregations would buy truckloads of pecans and then use them as fundraisers. But as I said, we do a lot of traveling. We're going around and saying thank you to people who have supported us for decades. And making new friends, and you know, it's like so many nonprofits. You constantly have to send out a fundraising letter. But what we try to think of is at Quintanilla is that we want to we want to be friends. Everything based on friendship, and we know that. Like if I have 7 different conversations, long conversations with people here, we've made friends. Now some of them may buy chocolate, some of them not. Some of them may send a $25 check. It will all. I think who was it? Abraham Lincoln. destroy my enemy by making him my friend. And I think Jesus calls us, and he said, love your enemies. But I don't know, some of you theologians here will get me. I think he was saying there are no enemies. Have a conversation, have a dialogue. And a business is a wonderful way because you have, you know, I mean, I've had long talks about how the pecans are harvested with people. You know, I've had long talks about when are we going to take refined sugar out of this product and just use honey. So it just gives you a way to enter into dialogue with people in many different ways. Life-giving.
I'd like to just say one more thing about how we impact our local economy down in America. Like Bren said, there was a boycott in the 50s. People wouldn't buy or sell from us, and so we pretty much lost our local market. And we really haven't gotten it back yet. We're starting gradually to reconnect and to make those friendships that are profiting both us and the local economy. And one way that we've done that in the past couple years is returning to our farming model. We are returning to an egg business, providing eggs for some local friends. And it wasn't anything like, oh, how are we going to market our eggs to the local economy? It was, we have some friends who come out potluck on Sunday nights, and they said, oh, you have chickens now. Do you have eggs? And so they started buying our eggs, that one family. And then a couple other families from their church wanted to buy some eggs. And so we have this huge co-op now of, like, all of these families, some of them that don't even know us, haven't even been out to the farm, but by word of mouth have heard about us and the service that we do, and they want to provide some kind of relationship with us and to support the local economy. And so we're trying to restructure our local economy using our produce and using what we have, and also using the relationships, not even really only the material that we're passing back and forth, but the relationships that we have and the word of mouth, you know, how our story has been passed on through the years is mostly word of mouth, and really trying to maximize that in a good way and in a God way, I think. And I've seen in the year and a half that I've been at Koinonia, I've seen a pretty large change in the local economy as far as how we're becoming more involved in that and reconnecting with people that we haven't connected with in decades. And so it's a beautiful thing to see taking place.
Love through service to others, joy through generous hospitality, and peace through reconciliation. That's our vision statement. Mm-hmm. And in the 50s, the Chamber of Commerce came to Koinonia and asked us to leave, that we were a blight on the... this past January, the Chamber of Commerce awarded Koinonia with the Agribusiness of the Year. So there is peace through reconciliation.
As you can tell, we can go on and on. And we're certainly very happy to continue the conversation with you all in other settings. Come catch us in different places. But we have about 15 minutes to take questions. So,
yeah, what's not working?
What isn't working?
Yeah.
You don't want to ask.
No, I really do. I mean, you don't have to give multiple examples, but I want to know, like, what's the severe challenge? What's not working? What, sources of conflict or frustration or, whatever, what's not working?
Right, what are some pitfalls of capitalism that you've encountered along the way?
Or pitfalls of following Jesus, too, because that's just as bad.
I can give you some practical... the Koinonia has had a lot of turnover. In 93, we had people who had lived there 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and they all left in the 90s. So those that lived communally, we had other people that were part of our community that were from that, that didn't leave, but they were not part of the communal model. And so... we lost that continuity. We lost our mailing list. or much of it, it wasn't managed well, and that causes a lot of pitfalls. We don't have there is no money to do what in capitalism you're told that you must do is advertise, at least in the way that that we normally think of advertising. I guess I'm advertising now. You know, we have lots of chocolate, so buy some chocolate. So we found a lot of things that we're told by capitalism that we need, we don't have, but somehow we are surviving. We have I don't know if I've already said this or not, but we a lot of people got very enthusiastic about Koinonia in the 50s and the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So we see a real percentage, a high percentage, of our mailing list every year of people are dying, and how are they going to be replaced? We don't buy lists. We watch our daughter Habitat and our daughter the Fuller Center for Housing, and they buy lists and magical things happen. We don't do that. I don't think we would if we could afford doing that. So it doesn't. What hasn't worked is that we lost a lot of business, and we don't know how to rebuild it other than just having faith that that we're meant to be on this planet. And Koinonia has survived amazingly for 67 years for all the trouble that it's gone through. So
I can make a couple comments along the lines of the what's not working, which I feel like I actually have different categories to think about from this morning's talk. So Danny mentioned that at the outset, you know, our intention was to employ at-risk youth and train them actually for technology jobs. And so we did that over the course of 9 or 10 years. There are a couple dozen, 24 high school and college age staff that spent anywhere from 6 weeks on an internship that was sponsored by Grace Wood Ministries to 6 years with us, where basically we trained them to program in Java and got to a certain level. We decided to basically stop doing that because we were realizing that that wasn't actually working. Like we couldn't develop solutions in a cost-effective way with teams that were structured that way. And the way that we talked about it and that we will often talk is about the discipline of the market. That, and I think if I can connect that with this morning's conversation about that there's a way in which we can, that we need to actually embrace kind of not a departure from reality, embrace finitude, embrace that there is a limited kind of set of things that we can do. And I think our own hopes definitely run in the direction of economic development and job development, and part of kind of this idea of 100% equity is that we are hoping that that Dayspring could actually birth other kinds of employment that might be more appropriate, but kind of making the leap from folks that are struggling in high school or junior high to folks that can develop business solutions for Fortune 500 companies is a leap that we by ourselves can't do. So that's one of the things that's not working, one of the places where we had to work. The second thing is, I think when you run a business together, in some ways there is some it's closer probably to the common purse folks than you might think, and in ways that are very, very concrete. People don't do the work, you don't get paid. If people do low quality work, then you get angry clients. So I think we've needed to learn to practice truth telling in the middle of that, and be able to speak truth to one another. And that truth both encompasses you are not, you know, the sum total of your being is not the work that you do, but you know, a portion of that truth is, well, you know, this is what we see in what you're doing. And I think that's been a difficult journey for us. I think those are kind of the things that you'd rather avoid talking about, but because you're kind of stuck in together and you need to work that out, you actually need to have those conversations.
One other thing I thought of that doesn't work in the communal model, if you have someone that leaves, you can't put an ad in the paper and hire somebody. You have to look around and see if there's any other community member that can do that. And I think a lot of getting the word out about our products has suffered because we haven't had someone consistent in that position that possessed those gifts.
In a strict capitalistic model, there's redundancies and people are replaceable.
Yeah.
In your model, how do you replace Kathy or whatever? How do you replace Kathy? Kathy was in that. She lived here.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's tough. I mean, the person who's coordinating our products right now, and I think doing a tremendous job, is someone who had gone through our seasonal internship and had become an apprentice, which is an exploring member, but he now realizes that he wants to move on from Koinonia, so he wants to do a year of service at Koinonia. So he's giving his year of service, and I'm looking around at our community members, and I'm thinking, you know, what are we going to do? And I don't know. I don't know. I do not see a community member that can step in, to be perfectly honest. So that's a problem.
I'm just struck how seeking to live out gospel practices in your context also makes for good business. I mean, it's a good way of interacting in the marketplace and the workplace. I have a question. I think for Koinonia, I'm just struck by, you know, the five pillars, the practice of prayer and thinking, study and work and fellowship and service. But what about the practice of administration? I'm curious how that's sometimes the hardest place to follow Jesus. How do we make decisions? What's the governance structure of in your state? Are you a not-for-profit corporation or?
Yeah, we are a 501c3, so we're a non-profit. We are exploring returning to a 501d status, which we don't want to get into all the definitions of that. And we operate by a consensus. We have teams, and each team has a coordinator. So the teams can make this. We all get together. We approve the budget for the year, and so the teams can make their own decisions without the community coming and talking stuff to them, because that's the quickest way to kill community, to think that you have to discuss every single issue. So the teams, if, you know, let's say an example I've used before is the maintenance team has money in its budget to buy a hammer. We're not going to have a whole community meeting to talk about that. You know? But if we see that the maintenance team is chartering a plane to go out to California to buy a gold-plated hammer, then someone in the community could call for that to be discussed. So, I mean, there are checks and balances. We have this ties in with something that you said. Our members who have made have entered into a covenant and who are going to remain at Koinonia, or feel called by God to remain at Koinonia, are the stewards. Okay, they're called the stewards of the community. And they reach consensus on the final, and make final decisions. But apprentices and novices, we sit with them and we get their input. So we don't just arbitrarily make decisions that affect the whole community without input from those whose lives are going to be affected by that. But really, I mean, Koinonia does have a director. I get to sit in that wonderful seat, and as I've told many people before, in an intentional Christian community, if you're called the director, it means that everybody else directs you. What I try to do is oversee and try to get people to communicate with each other and inform each other of what's going on. But it's really the coordinators, I think, that are running the day-to-day business part of Koinonia. So consensus, conversation, but not whole community discussion on every particular issue.
How many members are there?
There are 27 adults and one part of the process. There are six stewards. Six stewards, three novices, three apprentices, eight community interns, seven summer interns, six partners. Does that add up to 27? And then lots of children who really keep us grounded.
And we have tons of visitors who come for either a day, an hour, a couple months. So I'd say at any given time, we have between 30 to 40 people actually living and participating at the farm on a daily basis.
I sense there's probably a difference, but how do you gave me a hint as far as how you handled healthcare, and how is that handled among you, and is there any sort of thought or philosophy, or is it more economic driven?
For healthcare, we've kind of, our baseline has been basically that the company will provide health insurance for all employees and their family members. We are essentially doing that. Interesting conversation was that when the cost was hidden to folks, we actually had situations where there were folks that were basically taking health insurance with our company at a cost to the company of $10,000-$12,000 a year to cover the family, when they actually had coverage through their spouse for their family also. So they were basically paying $10 less in, copays or, limited deductible. So save them, a few hundred dollars a year while the company was paying, $12,000. So I think we realized that, it does a disservice to not expose the cost. And so we actually have been more deliberate about actually putting out the costs. We've actually structured it so that if you want a higher cost health plan, contribute either 15% or 25% of that health plan, depending on, if you're an individual, it'll be 15% for couples. If you're insuring a husband, a wife, then it'd be 25% because we figure, you don't have children that you're also supporting. You have two incomes, likely. And then, with family, then it's 15% of that. And then if you opt for a lower health plan, so that was a great conversation. It helped people be aware. If we're going to approach this as how does God provide for us, then you actually need to be aware of what's going on so that you're not kind of making decisions in very narrow view.
I'll try to answer this in 30 seconds because it's time. And everybody has to leave with a newspaper and a catalog from Koinonia. We'll be standing at the door. We receive a health allowance, very modest. Last year it was $20 a week. We had to cut it this year because of the economy, to $10 a week. So I can turn in receipts if I go get a prescription for something. And then what money that we don't use then goes into a medical account at the end of the year. And we just started this 2 years ago. And we have now about $30,000. So if something big happens to one of us, or more catastrophic than me having to get a prescription for something, that we have some money to go to. We have lots of sliding scale clinics in the area. All the children are covered in Georgia through Peach Care. It's something that I know if you watch any television that it'll people are scared about not having health care, and but we're there and we're surviving and we're trusting and we'll continue to look at that issue.
And we try to do preventive care as much as possible. So eating healthfully and taking care of yourself and exercising is a huge deal. So we try to keep that mindful.
We've explored trying to do some of our own covering ourselves instead of buying into the insurance model of paying that into an account for ourselves. So I'm sure if any of you have explored that.
So we want to respect the lunchtime. There will be a round table at 3 o'clock, I think, back in there, if folks want to have continued conversation, but just appreciate you guys being here today.
Okay.